Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowring. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we are talking to Chiara Pellissier. Welcome, Chiara, to Zero Hour, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I was reading some information about you. You were born in 1976, which in my world was about 3 years ago. but I thought it was interesting. You were raised in Guadalajara, Mexico?
I was born there.
You were born there?
Yes.
How long did you stay there?
Quickly brought to the States.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Unfortunately, in a way.
Do you have a green card? I mean, you know, we have to check on these things. You know, these are important.
That's true.
You never know who's listening to the show. You were raised in an artistic family, which is,
yes.
I think, in many ways a blessing, or at least I hope my children think that. you've been blowing glass since 1996, but I read on another something else that you had sent me, that you started out concentrating in music and gymnastics at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill.
Yes.
Wow.
That's correct.
Okay. So you went from that to glass in 1996 at the Penland School of Crafts in North Carolina. Continued to study at Penland, Pilchuck Glass School, Haystack Mountain School of Crafts, in Corning Studio as both a student and teaching assistant. You've taught glass blowing at Virginia Commonwealth University and now teach glass blowing there, I should say.
On and off, yes.
And also at Haystack in Deer Island, Maine, which is where you were just recently.
Just recently.
Yeah.
I go back many times.
Yeah, Maine's wonderful.
And that was a one-time summer session last year.
Your work has been exhibited throughout the East Coast, and you currently, I guess, live in Richmond.
Correct.
I think that's pretty much the thing. Is there anything else interesting about your childhood and the way you were raised? I think both of your parents were artists. Is that right?
Both my parents and my grandparents.
Really?
And my great-grandmother.
So really? We're artists.
Four generations.
Wow.
It's exciting.
Were they able to, the big question you ask people, it's not really a big question, but it's an interesting question. Were they able to make a living?
Were they able? Well, yeah. We're still here, so.
You mean they didn't starve to death, right?
They didn't starve to death, right?
Right.
My grandparents moved up to a tiny house they built up in Vermont as
really?
A sort of getaway, and they built it
from
the ground up in Shrewsbury, North Shrewsbury.
Oh, yeah. I know North Shrewsbury.
Do
yeah,
you?
Yeah.
I
went to school
been
in Vermont.
A long time, but it was beautiful. Dirt mm-hmm. roads and tucked mm-hmm. away. And I should know more details about my great-grandmother,
right.
But she's the most well-known in the country
really?
For her work, and it depends on what,
really? What did she do?
Genre or bubble you're in
yeah.
in life, but she did bronze sculptures. They were all fountains, and they were all of
really?
Small children.
Wow.
I'm trying to think about the ages of two
what
to
was her
four.
Name?
My grandmother's name was Edith Barreto Parsons, and Dadsy is the nickname for my grandmother.
Right.
And I've just grown up listening to her, or you know, hearing her name as Dadsy.
That's interesting because when I was a kid, we had an aunt and an uncle, and my brother couldn't get it straight, so I ended up with an Uncle Nin and an Uncle Doug.
An uncle who and an uncle?
Uncle Nin and Uncle Doug. Uncle Nin was the aunt.
Right.
It got a lot of attention
fantastic.
In restaurants, especially back in the '60s and '70s, where you know, uncle and uncle wasn't such a cool.
No,
thing.
Not so, right.
Yes,
and people weren't as used to it. But she has work. I mean, all these are, most of these are fountains. I shouldn't say all of them are fountains, but for gardens. So there's some gardens in Savannah, Georgia that have her mm-hmm. Sculptures in them. And the Cleveland Institute, or the Cleveland Museum of Art, rather, has
right.
a sculpture of hers, the frog baby, and there's a turtle baby. And all these are these infants that are mm-hmm. holding animals. There's the duck baby.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are others called the Joy Fountain.
Do you like them?
They're beautiful.
Really, they are. Because they
beautiful.
Sound sort of sentimental.
They are. They're.
But they surpass that.
I'm looking into
that.
Her,
they transcend
you know,
that
her family
sort of,
life.
Yeah.
So they transcend that. Of course, anyone can relate to these.
Uh-huh.
But the nature in which they're sculpted is exquisite. I mean, the anatomy is perfect.
Yeah.
And they're just joyful. It's about innocence of childhood. And they're exquisite. So my mother, that sounds funny. My mother still has these reproduced.
Mother. I think that's a Mexican term.
It may, Who knows? I switch back and forth all day, so sometimes I get a little tongue-tied.
From Spanish to English?
My father's South American, so yes. But,
okay.
So when we get commissions, or my mom gets commissions for these, she goes up to a foundry in New York mm-hmm. and has them reproduced still. So we still have the molds, the original molds.
Wow.
And it doesn't happen as often as it was happening, but it's still pretty amazing that my mom has kept that up, you know, her grandmother's work.
So how do you go from, you were a gymnast? You serious? Like a serious gymnast?
Well, I mean, I wasn't Olympic bound at any point, but, it certainly consumed my childhood. So from the time I was 5 until I was 17,
wow.
3 days a week and competitions on weekends during,
wow.
You know,
what did you do?
Season.
What kind of gymnastics?
Well, I did all around. So vault, bars, beam, and floor. And my specialty was uneven bars.
So did you like watching the Olympics this time?
You know, I missed all of them. I was tucked away
in Haystack Mountain School of Crafts
for the beginning part. Uh-huh. So I didn't see anything. There are no TVs up there.
Right.
So I think this is the first Summer Olympics.
There
that
was a
I
lot
had
of spinning and jumping.
Any,
if that helps you,
yeah.
Kind
that
of get,
yeah, you, okay. I'm glad
yeah,
they're still doing
yeah,
that because you never know.
Jumping, a lot
these
of that.
Days they
yeah,
might
there's a lot
be
of that going on there.
Ricocheting off into outer space and back. It's
and then also
crazy.
Flute. You were
and
into
flute.
Music.
So music was the was, major. Also, I was going to say not the major focus over gymnastics, but the fact that I could see myself, mm-hmm. you know, on and off going into music as a career.
Mm.
Where I knew gymnastics wasn't, obviously, there's a point where, you know, you're too old at 16.
16 is probably the cutoff.
I had started coaching a little bit, but I realized that coaching wasn't where I wanted to take my life. Although it's interesting because teaching glassblowing now, in a way, is at times a bit like coaching. And I know some of my students have joked with me and said, okay, coach,
because
it's such a physical... Yeah. Art form that I really focus in on the body and how comfortable you are in the space because obviously things are hot.
Yeah.
You're working with your whole body and it's timing and rhythm.
As long as we were talking about working with your whole body, you sent me something that I thought was kind of wonderful, your artist statement. And it says, in the moments when we prevail, we soar and float as though weightless and timeless. As a gymnast, I learned that control of one's insecurities resulted in a powerful and balanced presence of body. Give in to them, and the body becomes uncertain and clumsy. Rarely is life this transparent. And I have to assume that making art is almost the exact opposite of being a gymnast in many ways. I mean, you have a lot of control for sure, but the experience of being an artist is all about losing control, exploring new things, going new places, trying new things, or is it not for you as a glass blower?
Well, I guess there are two different ways for me to approach that question. As an artist, I think I do try to bring the depths of our feeling to the forefront, and my work, I would say, really is a visual diary of how I feel. So I am open to the insecurities and all the doubts and all these things that I, you know, this honesty that I think it's present in all of us.
Right.
And it's a beautiful thing and it's part of being human. So,
but a lot of people are so afraid of it, I think.
A lot of people are afraid of it. And I think that's the challenge that you have as an artist is putting yourself out there.
Right.
In that sense, it's very related to gymnastics, to flute, in the sense of performance, in the sense of you are on stage. You're, as a gymnast, it's only one of you out there at a time, and all these eyes are on you, and the pressure's on, and usually it's pretty quiet, and you can hear your own heart pounding inside your body, and you've got to make it look as though it's not, and calm everything, and have this outer appearance of control. And what I like doing as an artist is saying it's okay to have all that and all these other feelings and bringing those to the forefront.
Exactly.
So my work certainly flip-flops between that that confidence and that steady, unshaking hand and also what can lie beneath the surface.
It's really interesting, isn't it? It really is. It's interesting that there was a part of you that really was searching for that outlet.
Absolutely.
Gymnastics is... I guess some gymnasts do express themselves emotionally through their... Even though it's such a rigorous discipline, there's got to be an emotional Other than control.
There's the way you carry yourself.
There's the exuberance of it. There's the excitement of it. There's, you know, all of that, I guess. So, I think
perhaps, you know, with the floor exercise, when there's music to it, is when, I mean, again, I'm speaking as a former gymnast, so it's hard for me to say what others might think. But in terms of the audience relating to how that gymnast feels or the mood at that time, because the music enhances a lot of that, but you can tell right away when someone's shaky and nervous. It's just, it's so hard to hide those things.
So,
the floor routine could be something that's pounding, it's fast paced, you're supposed to be high energy, and then you could see them getting tired and worn out or being uncertain. So again, there are certain things that you cannot hide.
All those internal struggles. Speaking of internal struggles, You went from being a gymnast, being a flautist, is that right?
I used to say flautist. Sounded funny to me, but it's both.
A flute player.
It's both. that eliminates the problem.
Yes. What happened?
What happened? That's a good question.
I mean, I can get the pipe and the flute and
Into actually, it's ironic because the bars were my favorite, and then the flute, and then I blow glass. So all of them involve that. But I finally admitted to myself that I did not have enough passion for this to make it a career. And I think as a young adult, I was very confused by the fact that I had a lot of talent, and all my private instructors. I took private lessons, I think, since fifth grade. Maybe even, fifth grade until I was a freshman in college. And all of them had said, you have it. You have what it takes. You can make it. Like the violin, the flute is so competitive. So for someone to say, you have this, even though it's such a competitive instrument, I just thought, okay, I have this. I have locked into this gift. Unlike gymnastics, there's no end to it. I can do it for,
Right, like your lips don't turn into rubber after 15
years. You can hopefully still play dance a jig, with your fingers when you're 95. Five. It doesn't matter. But what I realized freshman year of college was, now I really have to work hard. I mean, now I'm here, and they honored me with a first chair seat in the band as a freshman, which doesn't happen too often. And I just realized I have to work this hard, and now it felt like work. It just felt like work. So after 3 hours in the studio, in the practice room, I was exhausted. I didn't want to do anymore.
Really?
And that's when I realized I'm not going to make it. If I, 2.5 hours, I'm looking at the clock every 5 minutes. This is ridiculous. So it was tough. I've never, I'm not a quitter kind of thing. So
yeah,
I can't quit.
Really,
I can't quit now.
Choice at that age.
But I realized this can't be it. There's something close. Maybe I'm supposed to be in the arts, but I didn't know what it was.
So you just immediately thought of glass.
I wish. No. No, not at all. My God. I wish I had. Right. That was thanks to my father, who was teaching. He's taught for years. But he was teaching that summer at the Penland School of Crafts in North Carolina. He's teaching a goldsmithing class. And I don't know which summer that was. I guess it was 95, actually. Yeah. And he said, well, you like jewelry, which I did. He was, as I may have just mentioned, he's a goldsmith. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with the goldsmithing studio at the end of the house. So I very much grew up in that environment. And, I enjoyed it. I'd go sit down on the bench every now and then and make a ring or make a bracelet, something very simple. And he said, well, since you like that, perhaps you'd like lamp working class, which is...
I'm sorry, what?
Lamp working, other words, torch working. It's a small torch that it's placed on the table in front of you.
Yeah.
And you melt tiny little rods of glass.
Okay.
So any number of things can be made.
Yeah, little
at the torch.
Knickknacks, birds.
Well, it's knickknacks, birds is what most people have seen. There can be hollow work, blown work, goblets, all kinds of stuff. The classic sign for that is it's extremely lightweight, or often can be if it's blown. And so he was teaching at Penland, which meant that as family, I could go and take a class for free. So he signed me up for this lamp working class, which I despised. I was apparently the worst student that Kari Russell Poole had ever had. But her husband was teaching in the glass shop, which is attached to that. And that's when I saw glass blowing again. I had seen it when I was 11. That's another story I can tell. But So I saw it again and said, that's it. That's what I want. Because it had that physical aspect that I was so drawn to. And, of course, the glass itself is seductive. So
really? How so?
It's just gorgeous. If you if you see it, most people can't take their eyes off it. For at least for a few minutes, they come in, wow, and you know they just become mesmerized.
Right.
It's pretty interesting to see people's faces and their mouths drop open a little bit.
Right.
Because it's moving and it's glowing and it's orange and the environment is pretty...
Oh, especially when you're working the glass, you mean.
It's pretty wild. When you're working the glass, because they see it cold and they see it rigid and they haven't seen it moving and molten at 2,000 degrees.
So how did this evolve for you? So there you were, a flutist, flautist, and you had a promising career. And now all of a sudden you've got this blob on the end of a tube that's like not doing what you want it to do.
And somehow
you're really connecting with this.
It did not matter.
It didn't matter.
And that was the key. I fell in love with the material. I fell in love with the smell of the shop, the environment that was sort of industrial mixed with arts, you know, the fact that I could get up and sit down and, you know, move throughout the day. And that was the other problem with jewelry was you sat at a bench all day.
That's important to you.
My
to be
shoulders
able to move
hurt.
Around.
Yeah, I have to move.
Well, I guess as a gymnast.
Have to move.
Yeah.
That connection is so important. And I realized with the flute that my fingers were moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the part that was most satisfying to me. It was
really?
My fingers were at ease.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of me was
sitting quite locked in. Pretty still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was love at first sight.
Have you ever made
really.
A glass flute?
I was doing just that in that first class.
I bet you were.
On the torch. I thought, well, I can take these tubes and then I can pierce these holes in the tubes and try to make these glass flutes. So that's really all I did because I thought, I mean, I had no connection to the medium. And, you know, I'd seen the jewelry work that my father had done, but I didn't have any connection to glass or much of the art world, which, except for, I mean, people would probably disagree with me because I grew up in a house where there were, you know, oil paintings and these sculptures and all this sort of stuff. But I'd never paid full attention to it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk because there's something a lot of people listening to this know a lot about the arts, but some people don't. And, you know, there's sort of glass blowing that you think of that goes on, you know, Venetian glass blowing, the goblets and jewelry and that kind of thing. And then there's a relatively new art form called glass art. I mean, it really has evolved and, you know, well, Jack Wax, who you work with, is sort of now considered, to his dismay, sort of one of the grandfathers
of, that's funny.
You don't see yourself, let me put it this way. Do you see yourself as a craftsman, as an artist, as both, or a craftsperson, I guess, how do you perceive yourself in the arts with glass? Because glass art still really is a relatively new, and I'm assuming the work I've seen of yours is not. I mean, I'd be hard pressed to drink out of some of the things that you.
Yeah, I no longer make functional work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Except for his gifts, I love doing it.
Yeah.
But I found that my true form of expression in terms of. Ideas and feelings does not come through with the functional work.
With the glass.
So,
it's tough.
As much as, you know, holding a glass in your hand that's made by hand makes drinking whatever
sort
you're drinking out of it
after
an incredible
experience. Is the glass half empty or the glass half full? You're kind of done,
always,
right?
It's always half full, in my opinion.
As far as you can take it.
That's right. And I mean, a lot of people get into the design work of that and make some fabulous stuff. So to get picky in terms of, of our wording here... glass art is yet another genre of glass that I don't see myself as doing, and neither does Jack to put that plug in there for him. But I see myself first and foremost as an artist.
Right.
So that shift was made, I think, throughout grad school, where I'm a technician as well. I take extreme pride in making things the right way and correctly. So however my ideas need to be expressed, it has to be, let's see, the medium has to be true to itself and true to that idea. So I'm starting to break the rules with glass. I mean, the rules, quote unquote, what should be done this way, not be done this way in terms of, say, Venetian style of blowing glass. But I started to say, well, I know the material this well. I've been working with it for 12 years. Now this is what I want to push it to do. I also say glass cannot do everything. that I wanted to do or express everything I wanted to express. So using other materials is...
like what?
Is, well, I've started using some fabrics, something as simple as bed sheets.
Really?
Found objects such as...
Wait a minute,
there's
in the
series,
glass?
Not in the glass, but maybe perhaps along with it or separate bodies of work.
Really?
That are, again, part of who I am and who I'm becoming as an
so
artist.
So you're sort of morphing into a sculpt?
Yes, I would say that, except for with a high intensity and a high technical level of glass blowing.
So, but you wouldn't call yourself a glass artist?
That no, because in my idea of glass art is not sculpture in terms of conceptual work per se. The way I view the term glass art is anything that's made out of glass. It becomes glassy. Now, this must sound really funny to somebody who doesn't know this world. As well, but it could be a vase that's gotten all cuckoo and crazy, and someone say, "Well, that's glass art." So, to be perhaps terrible and stereotypical, we'd throw a lot of decorative stuff onto glass art. You know, let's throw some glitter on there, so to speak.
Yeah, that wasn't what I was talking about.
I know, which is interesting because from an outsider's perspective, you wouldn't feel that difference,
right?
And from As a glass artist from the quote unquote inside of that, there's a big difference between an artist working with glass and someone who makes glass art. So
yeah, I mean,
you use
glass as a medium.
Correct, but it can entail other things. So MDF sometimes comes into it, or like I said, found
that
MDF, the medium density fiber board.
Is that that
so
wood stuff that looks sort of like it's made out of paper?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is included in a piece I have. That I'm working on for the Reynolds show next week. But whatever I need to get that idea across, the focal point could be glass. But then in addition to that, I have some supporting materials. Or this idea of dreams or depression or anything
else
that comes
talk
into
about that.
Where does your
work... Is this a fair question? I don't know. I don't care. If you don't like it, you can leave. Where does your work come from?
From inside.
I mean, do you start with an idea? Do you start with an emotion? Do you just start and something arrives?
I can never just start. I can play around and make some forms. Perhaps I might not know why, and they might sit on my shelf for 2 years before I know what to do with them. Generally, with ideas, again, it flip-flops. There are so many different modes you can lock into as an artist. One is as a designer. So if I'm doing a work for a particular space, then what comes first is that space, how it feels, what would be a great accent for that space as a designer.
Interesting. So you're talking about shape, color.
Shape, color, space in the literal, you know, open space in a room.
Right.
Whether it's...
how often do you get the chance to do that? Are you talking about
commission-wise.
So someone says, I want... And so
correct.
You're taking the space into consideration. That's
correct.
Interesting.
Yes. And, you know, thanks to Bev and, you know, with Reynolds.
Reynolds Gallery, right?
You know, I've started to do a few of these style commissions, which is, I love that. I love working with space. So that's one mode of thought. The other work, again, which people haven't seen much of yet, little by little, I'm working on this other body. Because, of course, it's not about direct sales. This other body is about expressing these thoughts and ideas that are deep within me as a human.
I don't know if you can put it into words. How do you do it? How do you get your thoughts and feelings into a piece of glass?
Well, again, they might not be in glass, and a lot of times they're not in glass. So, for example, the Found Mattress series that has just barely begun.
Found mattresses.
So found, it doesn't have to be mattresses, but any object that you find and then alter to an extreme to make a statement, to make a point, to bring across a feeling or a mood. Those again, it often aren't glass, because I like thinking large. I like large scale things, and glass, of course, poses quite a problem, engineering wise, with that. But this idea of taking something ordinary and transforming it, say a door, and then what happens if you take that door and you stretch it a mile long? What does it become? A mattress, as
becomes a
piece
a very
I did
long
for.
Door.
Very long door. Yes. But does it? Or does it start to allude to a road?
No,
right?
of course. It could,
that's an example. Right.
Whatever, sure.
Of how you can take these these objects, that, everyday objects that we come across. So I used...
So do you find yourself moving more away from glass?
Well, I can never move away from it. I think I'm pretty locked into it. But I think it it will... It's starting to diverge into two different bodies of work.
Right.
And one is this emotional, super heavy emotion-based work. That can entail glass or anything else.
Well, you've got a couple of shows going on right now at Haystack and one at Blue Heron Gallery. Well, I guess they're both up in Maine, right? Yeah. So
right, at this time,
can't
really
jump in the car. If someone wants to see your work, can they see it online?
Absolutely.
Where?
So I have my own website.
What is it?
It is chiarapolicierglass.com, which would have to be spelled. it's Kiara is K-I-A-R-A, and the last name is spelled P as in Peter, E-L-I-S-S as in Sam, I-E-R, glass,
Kiara Policia.
ChiaraPoliciaGlass.com.
ChiaraPolicia.
I know.
I'm fumbling around
it's,
here.
It's an Italian first name and a French last name, and I speak Spanish and English. How do you like that? So
that's good.
That's good.
Well, yeah. So your next language will be French, I suppose.
Perhaps. Japanese, hopefully.
Well, let's talk about the show that's coming up.
Okay, great.
You've got a show coming up at Bev Reynolds Gallery, which is here in Richmond.
Correct.
Called Reflection.
Reflex.
And it includes works by Jack Wax. And I'm looking at these other names to see if I know any of these other folks. I don't.
Kazue Taguchi graduated a year after me, so 2007 from VCU School of the Arts.
Graham Caldwell,
who lives up in Brooklyn, New York now.
And Mark Petrovic,
who I used to work for. He lives up in Connecticut.
And the show is going to be September 5th.
Yes.
Are you ready? Or are you still working?
I'm ready, but I am still working at the same time.
Are you really? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm always, I guess I like the adrenaline or something.
So what, yeah, really, last minute stuff. Yeah, I can remember friends years ago bringing paintings into art shows with still the paint was wet.
Yeah, I hear about that.
It was oil paint.
I'm fortunate in that sense is that, you know, the paint I use tends to dry a little faster than that. But
So what's the show about?
Well, the show, I think, is about real contemporary glass. So glass that's been pushed to its limits. And glass in space, glass on the wall, installation, things that people normally don't think of as being in glass. So sculptural work, but based in glass.
And, do you find it hard to sell?
Thanks to Bev and Reynolds, at this point things are great, and people seem very excited about my work. And I really push aesthetic beauty along with, even if the theme could be pretty severe or, or dreary. My half, you know, glass half full theory always makes things quote unquote beautiful. So people have been pretty enthused and. Odd, I think, about the things that I've made in glass. So I think this show is going to be a perfect example.
Well, I want you to come back 20 years from now. I want to see what you're doing.
You'll
probably
fantastic.
Be back into gymnastics or something.
Oh, gosh.
No, I don't think so. Yeah. That doesn't seem to be the way
it'll always be a huge part.
What will you be doing? You'll be, I don't know, you'll be training elephants or something. You know,
I do have dreams with elephants in them, actually. So,
so
maybe
knows?
You might not be far,
I might not be far from the truth. Guess what we're out of?
We're out of time.
Covered a lot of ground. Well, thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's
Kiara,
been a pleasure.
I really appreciate you coming. Thanks for talking with us today, and thank you folks for listening. We hope to see you again on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's a radio for the rest of us.